For Comic's Sake on iTunes.
At For Comic's Sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/ForComicsSake.
For Comic's Sake on Instagram.
Or email us ForComicsSake@yahoo.com.
For Comic's Sake presents
Baby Got Bat
Issues. This podcast is rated M for mature content, not approved by the Comics Code Authority. Today we are discussing spoilers for Vision, issues 1 through 6 from 2015, by Tom King, Gabriel Hernandez-Walta, and Jordi Belair. And here is the back synopsis of the trade paperback. Behold the Visions. The Vision wants to be human, and what's more human than family? So he heads... And what's more human than family? See, there is a question mark there, so I guess reading it that way. So he heads back to the beginning, to the laboratory where Ultron created him and molded him into a weapon, the place where he first rebelled against his given destiny and imagined he could be more, that he could be a man. There he builds them. A wife, Virginia, two teenage twins, Viv and Vin. They look like him. They have his powers. They share his grandest ambition, or is that obsession? The unrelenting need to be ordinary. They're the family next door, and they have the power to kill us all. What could possibly go wrong? Artificial hearts will be broken, bodies will not stay buried, the truth will not remain hidden, and the Vision will never be the same.
They sound like really nice neighbors.
Yeah.
That's exactly who I want living next to me.
That is...
I feel really comfortable.
Exactly. You know, when you have a cover like this of the front of their house door...
They're so happy.
They're all arm in arm, and they're waving, and smiling and happy. And then you read that, it's the exact opposite what material-wise is what you get inside that book.
Hey, guys, look at, we're waving, we're normal, what?
The initial reaction, Vision for me, since the Age of Ultron movie, was definitely, you know, where I started to be like, all right, I want to read more about this character. Much like some of the other, like, lesser characters of Marvel that have never had a movie or, like, a constant ongoing series for 50 years.
We even talked about a couple of those issues in the last podcast that we did.
Yeah, and much like a Doctor Strange and something like that, where I'm like, all right, I'm going to do some more research on Vision. Outside of him just guest appearing in Avengers issues, you know, I've never read his miniseries or any kind of solo series or anything like that. And after the hype of Age of Ultron, you started seeing the image for issue number one, which is the cover of the trade paperback in issue number one, as we see here. And I'm just like, well, that just looks fun. I don't read synopsis going into it. I just pick it up, dive into it. And that initial reaction was like, whoa, this is like dark and fruity. And I remember when you kind of came into the picture with it, I remember just talking about it, but then I'm like, issue four.
Yeah, yep, that was it, actually. And I do remember that because, you know, at this point we were already talking about comic books for a little while. I mean, not a ridiculous amount of time, but we both knew that each other read comics.
This came out in like October, November-ish of last year, so it was maybe a month or two.
Sure. And you were telling me about it before, you know, issue one, two, or three, you're like, hey, this is pretty good. This is a pretty good series. And then I do specifically remember issue number four, and you're like, you kind of kicked me in the ass. And I don't always take people's recommendations that seriously, but when you were overboard with it.
Yeah.
And that's when I jumped on board. I bought 1, 2, 3, 4, and I haven't looked back since.
And that's even after I borrowed them to you. So you,
sure. Yeah.
You were
that's right. Yeah.
You were scot-free because you'd just been like, well, I just read them. I don't need to buy them.
Yep. I ended up buying them all. Yeah. I ended up buying them.
I remember I put them in a bag and I wrote drugs and then parentheses
right.
I put comic books.
And in fact, I actually remember that's when we first had the initial idea for a comic book podcast.
Yeah.
Because even all the way back then, only issue number four, we were already talking about this is, at this time, this is more you. But it was the, and if we ever do a comic book podcast, we can have a spotlight and we can talk about Vision. Like, this is a, right? This is a perfect example of a comic book that we can talk about.
Issue
and it was,
four.
Yeah.
Issue four.
Yeah. So, and it was funny at the time. But looking back at that, it deserves its own podcast.
Yeah. So with it being Baby Got Back issues number one. So every single month we're going to be doing a spotlight like this, and this is going to be the first of probably 1,000.
Oh, at least.
Yeah, 1,000.
We got to at least try to chase the Detective Comics number.
I was just going to say that. We have to outpace it. We have to.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, we're going to be doing probably about 5 podcasts a week for the next 100 years, 10 years.
Yeah, whatever the math is.
Yeah, I don't.
So that is just kind of the initial reaction and excitement about this series. Before we jump into all the individual issues, and this is 100% spoilers, everything that is in those first 6 issues is discussed. First, going to just talk about who the Vision is. Here's a character his information and description here. First appearance ever was in Avengers number 57 from 1968, created by Roy Thomas, Stan Lee, and John Buscema. And that is where the character came. So he's been around since 68.
Old character.
Up until 2015 is the first time that he made first live action on screen.
And that's, you know, for as long as that character's been around, I knew so little going into this comic. And I mean, I didn't know. I mean, I basically knew from the Avengers, the second Avengers movie.
Yeah.
But that's basically all I knew.
And that will be a good intro for a lot of people, even me who, like, didn't read much of him at all and just caught him in cameos and stuff. So yeah, he's this synthezoid android robot, you know, with human emotions and he can phase through objects and walls and floors, and as we've seen in the movie, he's got some extra powers of being able to lift Thor's hammer and things like that. And there's a lot of interesting things, and I think we get even more interested by, like, this is like the Hawkeye version of Vision, this series.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good analogy. Yeah.
Like, this is what he does when he's real life avenging.
Yeah.
And while you see a couple moments when he's avenging, but it's done in a very hilarious context when he's, like, on the phone.
Yeah, he's basically telling a story, and
So yeah, that is the idea of this series, and we're just gonna jump in right now. 100% spoilers. The Vision. Issue number one, Visions of the Future. So as we open up this comic book, we're starting, it's September. The Vision family just moved into a suburb in Virginia. Vision works for the White House. This material is all just brand new with the continuity of, this is its own continuity, while it still kind of makes references to other things going on. As far as I'm concerned, I don't think there's any other ties other than this is the beginning of us knowing this as a reader. And as we go through here, we find out, we meet neighbors George and Nora. They're bringing cookies. You have them.
That's what you do.
Exactly.
You bring cookies to new neighbors.
The visions, the family are new. And, you know, you see a floating mailbox here, and you're getting some narration, which during the course of this issue, if not several issues, you just have a narration that you're not necessarily knowing where it's coming from.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily, like, Vision, like, saying it, just the way the words, unless he's
it's
just
kinda,
talking.
Yeah, it's kind of like he is, it's like he's narrating himself. He's not narrating it as Vision, he's narrating it as someone that would narrate a character like Vision. Does that make sense? That's the best way I can describe it.
As we go through, we do find out who the actual narrator is, but as the reader, we're just kind of like, well, this is the intro. We assume it's going to be him. So, yeah, they're bringing cookies, and, you know, the wife, or Nora, is all, she's all very welcoming.
She's very positive about it.
George is just like, you know, these guys are robots.
Yeah,
he keeps saying robots.
Yeah, he's a stick in the mud. The conversation that they have going up to the door is pretty hilarious, and, you know, I hate to say this, but it's almost as if they're speaking like they're racist.
Yeah,
in a way.
And you have those themes throughout, and we see a thing with, like, vandalism and stuff on the garage door.
You have sayings like, you know, those people, or they, or, you know, very generic, general groupings of them.
So all that is going on, and George isn't too excited about it.
He looks annoyed. He just looks annoyed, like, I could be taking a nap right now. That's kind of the face he has.
And as they're talking, and the wife's defending, she's like, "Cookies, God, yeah, you know, they're just cookies, you know." And he's like, "You know, they don't eat cookies." And as they're arguing, we get the Vision saying, "Excuse me," opens the door. As we turn to the page here, we get the title of the issue, "Visions of the Future," and then the whole family right there: Vision, his wife Virginia, and the twins, Viv and Vin, asking, you know, may we help you? And they have a very welcoming presence as well.
They do. The one thing I do get from the artwork here is that, in a way, their smiling does look sort of forced and faked a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they're like, okay, everybody smile at once. That's what we're supposed to do.
And, yeah, that they're just trying to be normal, and they've probably witnessed other people in the neighborhood, and like, well, this is just how it goes. And we get a little tour of their house. They welcome them inside, and we see a bunch of gifts that were given from, like, all of the other Marvel characters. And, you know, you got things like a piano from the Black Panther, and you have this this wedding gift here from
the vase.
Well, the Mount Wondador from the Scarlet Witch gives them this this flower vase tree thing, which has its own significance in a couple issues. You mentioned the vase, because that's the thing that is constantly throughout this series being the mysterious thing throughout here. And it's from Zenla, from the Silver Surfer, so my favorite superhero character. So it's kind of cool seeing this floating vase.
You know, just looking at this over again, for an Avenger, he doesn't exactly have the most extravagant house. Like, you know, it's like the definition of him trying to fit in. He doesn't live in a mansion. He doesn't live in a bat cave. He doesn't, you know.
Your normal
in a
suburb house.
Yeah, he doesn't live at Stark Industries. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't, it's just a regular old house that you'd see in some subdivision somewhere.
And then you even see Captain America give them a lighter from England in 1943, and that's on display too. Mm-hmm. So, a bunch of cool little artifacts there, and as they're, you know, just, I'm sure the... that George is still just uneasy about the whole thing, and as they're walking away, what's kind of interesting is that the narrator goes, Nora's last thought will be about the water vase from Zenla. And that's something weird that, like, it's still, as we're reading the series, it's still such a mysterious thing.
Yeah.
And I got a feeling it's going to be some crazy thing in issue 12 when they wrap it up, and there's just going to be, it's going to all come back to the beginning.
Wrapping it up.
We're already talking about it.
Yeah.
And as of the recording... the artist, Gabrielle Walta, he had said he just saw, like, the script for issue 10, and he's just like, Tom King's a genius.
Oh,
and that's cool. Like,
I love it.
Just read that right before coming over here. So, they're done with the meet and greet, and, you know, they're throwing away the cookies because they don't eat, and much like a later issue that you mentioned in the normal podcast where they're out to dinner and he's ready to pay and just, you know.
At least they have the decency to do it after the neighbors leave and to throw them in the garbage.
Yeah, yeah. So we're continuing the relationship here. They kind of have a battle of intelligence going on between the two, between Vision and Virginia. And we see a little more about the kids. So we're just kind of seeing, like, how neighborhood kids react and how other neighbors react. There's one guy giving a selfie and holding the peace sign, and Vision actually looks pissed off there.
Yeah, you know.
He's not even trying to force a smile there.
And then there's another, there's someone that's taking a picture of them, like, kind of through bushes into their backyard. So clearly they don't know what's going on. They're just getting their picture taken. Well, actually, they are looking. They do look pissed.
And they're basically being treated like freaks. Of just like...
Yep.
Everyone, they're an exhibit. They're like, you know, animals at the zoo, basically, that everyone's coming up and...
Just... Animals at the zoo that can pretty much rip you to shreds.
Yeah.
And they're not in cages.
and now he works in the White House for the president, and he's talking with him, and what's great is that it's not even that big a deal. Like, whatever's going on there has nothing to do with this comic at all, but... So they kind of jump into that, but once again, it's all about the family itself. And... what's interesting is that Vision remembers a glitch in his wife. He thinks about it where he took the brain waves from. So it's kind of teasing as we're going on in the issues, we start to learn, you know, at the end of this book, we don't have those answers. We have them in a later issue. Mm-hmm. So anyone who hasn't read past six, you know, it's a mystery that will be answered in a couple issues after this trade here. But yeah, once again, we're just experiencing the family as they are, and the kids just kind of float in the air, and all the kids at school looking at them, and, you know, the wife is wondering, like, why they have to leave the school, and Vision is just like, well,
that's what they do.
Kids do. Like, if they want to be normal, then they're going to be going to school just like that.
You can certainly tell that they can feel that they're being picked on.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like they know it. They're starting to get some of those human emotions. There's a girl that asks, you know, if they're normal. She types it on her laptop and shows him. And you can tell that he is, you know...
He starts questioning.
Yeah, he does. He's like, am I not normal? What's wrong with me?
Yeah, and then, that's just it. Yeah, like, if anything, they think what maybe any given teenager that's in those crowds are thinking about themselves.
Sure.
But now that they stand out visually, they're the ones that, you know, they're having those same exact questions. And even the people, these kids that maybe not even think that they're normal, that the kids are normal, that now they find people that are like, all right, well, we must be normal because they're not normal. And so you kind of see the routine of the kids going to school. Then it leads into the whole Vision just kind of watching his wife sleep, and that's where he wakes up in the middle of the night and starts questioning and just like, oh, she's had some glitches since I've created her. And he just kind of ponders on where those glitches come from. And
I do want to mention something, and I'll bring this up later. There's a reason I'm bringing this up, but they're right now sleeping in separate beds.
Yeah.
And it's like I saw that, I remember, and I didn't remember that from the first time I read it. Rereading it, I noticed that. I'm like, that's kind of funny.
It's got an old-fashioned feel.
Yeah, it's like from the 50s.
Yeah, it's like something you'd see in a sitcom.
So as of right now, they're not really... They're just going through the motions. They're not really romantically involved. They're just... They're husband and wife, but that's where
they're
it ends.
They're literally made to be together.
Yes.
But are they literally made to be together? And, yeah, so as there's kind of an argument going on here, and Vision kind of leaves, and he's got to go, you know, do his Avengers duty and his White House duties and stuff like that, and there's an argument even at the table, too, where Viv, the daughter, leaves. I'm trying to remember what she had done here.
She'd be a snotty teen.
Yeah, you know, she's just acting out.
Pretty much.
And Virginia is talking about Viv's use of passive voice in an essay. They're literally just talking about schoolwork and stuff. And so she storms off. And did you expect this to happen?
On the next page?
Yeah.
No, I did not. Yeah, there's a big thing.
Yeah, so she's speared. She's impaled. And a blade goes right through the middle of her body, right above her stomach and her chest, and
I remember reading this the first time, and I'm just, you know, reading casually. I'm like, oh, this is cute, and then I remember turning that page, and I'm like, whoa, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Whoa, what? What just happened?
It is one of those where you flip back being like, all right, stuck together?
Yeah, exactly. Am I missing something? Did something rip out? Yeah. It changes drastically in just a one-page turn. And it's a whole different story.
So Viv is knocked out. She just got speared. We see the Grim Reaper. And as the Grim Reaper has made his appearance here, he's yelling imposters to the family, to the whole family. And during this entire entanglement, Viv is still on the ground and just keeps repeating, mother, mother, mother.
Yeah.
And Grim Reaper is yelling imposters, and he's attacking them. Now, Grim Reaper, I have some Grim Reaper facts here that I looked up. First appeared in Avengers number 52 from 1968.
Wow.
So he was just...
He's too.
Yeah, and he was slightly a few issues before Vision came about.
Okay.
Once again, created by Roy Thomas and John Buscema. Eric Williams, who is... that's his real name. He's the brother of Simon Williams, a.k.a. Wonder Man. Now, Simon, that's where Vision got his brainwaves from. I think we learned this eventually going on, but I recently re-educated myself on this because of the possibility of Nathan Fillion, your quote-unquote cousin.
Yeah, he is. I don't know why you said it, quote-unquote.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't get it.
Just for legal purposes.
Yeah.
the views represented in this podcast are not that of Nathan Fillion. Simon Williams is a character who, him and Eric Williams... were creating some kind of tech back in the day, and Iron Man, or aka Tony Stark, had created some, and he had gotten patents on the same stuff, and basically had caused them, like, for all their hard work, just went down the drain because this, you know, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist guy came in, did the same thing. I don't think it was stolen. I think it was just one of those that was happening at the same time.
Okay.
But he's the rich guy. He can make a dream happen a lot quicker than Eric and Simon here. And then that caused them to go into crime, and there was some embezzlement going on. and all of this shit was happening, and then there's the Baron Zemo, the Avengers villain at the time, who had witnessed, he wanted a way to take down Iron Man and the Avengers, and he had seen that Tony Stark hired Iron Man as a bodyguard for him. You know, it's not a public information that both are one and the same. So Baron Zemo hired Simon Williams, and he goes, you know what, I have this experiment. I'm going to give you powers, and you hate Tony Stark and Iron Man. I'm going to give you powers where you can get revenge and knock out Iron Man and get Tony Stark. So Baron Zemo, the villain, is giving Simon Williams, who had his life taken away from him financially from Tony, he's like, I'm going to give you the needs in this testing that I have, and you're going to become a supervillain. And he doesn't necessarily say that in those exact terms, but he gives them enough, being like, we have an experiment, you can do this and get revenge. And he's like, all right, I'll do it. And he was being used the whole time. Simon Williams was. Eric Williams is kind of like off to the side at the moment. But during the battle, there's a bunch of stuff that happens, but then the Avengers prevail, and Simon/Wonder Man, who's his title when he gets the Baron Zemo powers, dies in the same issue that he debuts in. So he was just there for just the character, in and out, and that was it. And it was literally years later that that's when they supposedly off camera recorded the brainwaves of Wonder Man, because they felt that they could save him. They knew he was being used by Zemo, and they're like, you know what? We could save him maybe someday, so let's record those brainwaves. And then when the whole Ultron thing happened, Ultron broke loose from his creator, Hank Pym. And then when Ultron wanted to create his vision, which, you know, we see that, it pretty much follows it along in the movie pretty decently. And he steals there's the brainwaves of Wonder Man was just sitting there. So then Ultron used that, created vision out of all that. And while all that was happening, Eric Williams, he became the Grim Reaper as a result of Simon dying while saving the Avengers. So, his brother dies, and then he's just like, alright, I'm going to become the Grim Reaper.
Huh. Alright.
And Eric is guilty because Simon took the fall for the embezzlement. So that's where he wants to now just... he's just depressed, basically.
Yeah.
And what happens when you're a depressed guy who lost all your money and your brother just died? Well, I'm going to become the Grim Reaper. That is everybody's go-to story, I think. But he became the big bad because he was always a bad child. He was the black sheep of the family. So that is all just a little history
on Grim Reaper. Yeah, quite the history lesson.
Yeah, so I was doing some rereading and some cross-referencing.
Do you have the Avengers, like the original Avengers, the hardcover or like a trades?
I have all of that stuff I just explained. I have that in... I have that in paperback trades.
Yeah.
I own every single Avengers issue through, like, 60-something at the point. Not in individuals, because those, you know, I'm not rich.
Yeah.
But I own them in the collected format, because I'm like, I want to read these stories. I don't care. I don't care if they're
the originals. They're to read.
Obviously, it's cool if it had, but I'm like, I want the story. And so, yeah, all that stuff. And it's fun going in those archives, being like, okay, I got to go to issue 52 now and flip through and find out where all these characters come from. So when Grim Reaper shows up in here...
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah. Everything's going to be fine. He's yelling imposters because now, you know, Vision, who has the brainwaves of his brother, now has created this family, and he knows this family's fake. And he has an issue with the fact that his brother's brainwaves are probably being abused and now creating family members.
That's deep.
So the battle
is quite the connection. It really is.
Yeah, it's
that's.
And what's
I'm
great,
impressed with Tom King. I really am.
And what's cool is that you can read this without having known any of that, and you're into the, like, you're just intrigued.
Just like I was. Just like I personally was. I didn't know the backstory until you just said it right now.
And you can reread this now, which, you know, I'm sure everyone will till the end of time, and you're just gonna just see it in a different light. But as the Grim Reaper is attacking the children and the family and all that stuff, he's ready to slice open Vin until Virginia comes up with the cookie sheet from George and Nora, the neighbors, and just bloodily smacks in the back of the head of the Grim Reaper.
It's graphic.
Yeah, and from my understanding, Grim Reaper is just a human being, like, just because he became the Grim Reaper and has the weapons and stuff. I don't know if he has any, like, mutant abilities or anything like that, but basically he gets hit with the tray, bloodied up, and that is where that character dies. So we're left with Viv constantly just going, mother, 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 she hasn't moved yet. They're all kind of standing up, and Virginia is questioning herself, you know, what did I do?
Yeah.
And is he? No, 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 please no. And the narration's continuing on.
And you get your first, how do I want to say this? You get your first deceit.
Mm.
Because she knows what had happened was wrong.
Yeah.
And she says, don't tell your father.
That's how the issue ends. It doesn't just, she doesn't just get the mop and the broom and sweep it up and being like, all right, well, dinner's ready.
Yeah, she knows something's going on. It was not supposed to happen.
And she reacts as if, you know, what a normal person would probably react, of just being like, I was caught in the moment, my family was threatened, I was going to knock them out, but I killed them because, you know, she probably has more power than she knows.
Oh, and she probably has way more power than the Grim Reaper, I would imagine.
Oh, easily.
I mean.
and what's crazy is that going back to that vase, which we still don't know, and like, what, issue 8 has been released, I think
8 or 9.
9 is like the next one, I think. And when she says, don't tell your father, the narration ends the issue by saying, the mystery is then not why they are empty, but why anyone would ever make such a vase. Because they keep talking about that vase from Zenla. And it's just crazy how it's just like, okay, all this shit just happened. The narrator just keeps mentioning that vase. Yep. And like, Nora's thinking about the vase. That vase has to have some crazy cosmic result of, I don't even know what. Yep. That's what's exciting. And yeah. That's what closes out that first issue. After you reading that first issue, what was your intention of picking up issue 2?
It was my intention of it?
Or your immediate reaction of being like, will I pick up number
2? Oh, yeah. Well, basically, luckily I didn't rip the comics that you lent me.
Yeah.
Because I read all 4 of them in one sitting. Yes. And right when that ended, I was like, whoa. Because I'm a sucker for number 1s. And that was, for Marvel, one of the best number 1s. I bet you I've ever read. I mean, it's up there with some of the best. Hawkeye number 1 by Matt Fraction.
Yes.
When he did his run, that's up there with the quality of this.
Yeah.
And this first Vision, the Vision number 1, blew my mind.
So damn good. And
fantastic writing.
I was in the current state of being like, I gotta wait a month now.
Yeah. I didn't know who Tom King was.
Yeah.
I had no, I mean, I don't know.
This is the first time, you know, this puts him on the map, as I think he even said himself, and that's where I started to become familiar with him. And, you know, at the time of this release, he was still just like, all right, who's this guy writing it? At the time we're talking about this trade, he's writing Batman, and now he's like, you know, got both of these big time books at both of the companies.
Think about that. The Vision, you could make the argument, it's not Marvel's biggest character.
No.
But now you're in DC, and you're writing your Batman book. That is your flagship book for your company.
And Tom King even said, too, when he was asked, they were going to pitch him something, and they said, like, we want you to write, and he had jokes saying, he's like, oh, great, just because some of the other stuff I've done with the Grayson book over at DC, they're going to want me to write Winter Soldier, and that's fine, I'll write him, but they're going to get something in my wheelhouse or something. And then they're like, we want you to do The Vision. And Tom King was just like, oh my God, The Vision, that's my favorite character ever.
Yeah.
And he later revealed on a podcast being like, he's like, I pretty much lied, because he's like, they could have said any character. And he goes, I would have said, oh, Winter Soldier is my favorite character ever.
Yeah.
Oh, you know.
I'm trying to think of some obscure character.
Like, if you want an obscure character, I'll give you this one. Dupe from the X-Men.
Dupe from the X-Men. That's my favorite character.
He's kind of like a Slimer looking character.
Okay.
He's almost like a complete ripoff of Slimer. I'm not sure when
if Tom King would write a Duper book, I would read it.
Dupe. Dupe.
Dupe.
But it would be called Duper.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, I would read that.
I'm not sure if Dupe preceded the Ghostbusters or if he's like of a recent recent creation. But anyways, that's just Tom King's thoughts. It's just being like, well, they're giving me this book. I'm going to do something. And he had thought he wanted to put Vision in space, and he was talking about it's going to be sci-fi, it's going to be this. But then he just realized, he's like, all right, I'm going to do this. And completely just...
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I can't wait to find out what happens in issue 2.
Well, let's turn a couple pages and start it.
now onto issue 2. Everything slips through their fingers.
We open up right in the middle of a school hallway, and we see Vin sitting there and just silently, and people are passing by. Nobody's really drawing attention to him. He's almost
chilling.
He's kind of invisible in a way, and he just sinks and phases right through the floor, and he's gone. And these people moving around, nobody notices it. There's a girl that, you know, just at her locker, and she turned around.
It's
and
almost depressing.
It's,
like, you would think, like, if I was in high school and there was a Vision type character in my school, I'd be, like, always keeping my eye out for him.
I would be having them sign this copy of this book. That's what I would do.
You know, they made a comic book about you?
Then we cut over to a hospital bed, and the daughter, Viv, after getting just impaled by the Grim Reaper, still saying, mother, 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 and she's just on repeat, basically, and she's got all these tubes hooked up to her, and her body's in half, and just in complete pain. And we cut to the House of the Visions, and they're sitting there silently, Virginia and Vision, and she's starting to talk about her side of the story.
Hey, what do you see in the background in that first panel there?
Is that a vase from Zenla?
I think it might be.
Ah, very much so. So it's weird because that is very much in focus, and you don't see any of the other items. And
you know, you don't strike me as a big flower guy, but if you could buy that vase...
Yeah.
You would buy it.
I would definitely buy it.
Would you put flowers in it? Just let
it sit there. I would put comics in it.
Well, there we go. Perfect.
I would take...
I never heard anyone say, I hate flowers.
Honestly, I hate them.
Yeah. They're the worst.
They're pointless.
Yeah.
I would buy extra copies of the Vision comics and get them, take someone to who's artsy and craftsy.
Because
you can make bouquets out of like newspapers and stuff like that. I would have them make a bouquet of flowers out of Vision comics, put it in that Zenla vase, and...
That's almost painful, here, thinking about that, though. Ripping up a nice comic book.
But they're doubles and triples. So
yeah, all right, good.
I did the same when I cut up my Astonishing X-Men comics to make them my ceiling fan, so... Anyways, she's retelling the story in the way she sees it, and she actually starts lying. Because we see in flashback mode of all the stuff that was going on, what actually was happening, and she's explaining this whole thing to Vision, and showing how she was wanting to use her powers, but her laser, but then, like, you know, was just going not to hit him, but just to scare him away, basically. And eventually she did it in her story. And Grim Reaper got startled and scared, and we see him running out of the house, and, you know, still the mother, and the daughters on the ground and stuff. So the result was the end there, except for the fact she failed to mention that she killed the Grim Reaper, and and who knows where the Grim Reaper is now.
Did something.
Yeah. So that is, that's interesting that she's just flat out lying, and what's even more interesting to me is that Vision doesn't know that. You would think, like, readings, and that's just maybe makes the series even greater, is that even he, that maybe is the scariest thing, is that even he can't tell that she's lying due to, like, brainwaves and...
You know, that'd be interesting, and the very last issue, when the series concludes, if you find out he really did know, and he pretended that he didn't to protect her. I'm very interested, that could, you never know. Maybe that's wishful thinking, maybe I'm going too deep here, I don't know, but we'll see.
Then we cut back to school, and Vin is sitting there all alone once again. He's sitting there just staring at his lunch, and he's, you know, a lunch that he's not going to eat, and he's just holding an apple and he's staring at it. We still have the narration from somebody who we don't know yet, and as he's sitting there and just thinking about everything that just went on with his sister and possibly dead, and he just crushes the apple in his hand, but then you have a word balloon off panel that says, "Hey man, Vin, right? Where's your sister?" And we meet Chris. Chris is the lab partner of Viv.
Yeah, normal kid.
Yep, and
he's
addressing Vin because he wants to know where she is. He's like, "Well, we're lab partners. We got this project going on." And Vin's not giving him the time of day. And that's when Chris kind of gets a little mean about it.
Yep.
And just, you know, in a way, maybe would treat him like any other kid that is not answering his questions, you know. So he's not really, you know, getting up in his face, like, scared to approach him or anything. He's mostly just curious. He wants her number so he can call about the project. And that's when Chris starts getting upset when because Vin isn't replying.
Yep, and I think this is when he says the statement that I think kind of flips a switch in Vin. He wants to know, you know, he says, don't you people have phones?
Mm-hmm.
Or should I just send my messages directly into your metal assholes? And I think that is something that kind of makes Vin's brain snap a little bit.
Yeah, because then Chris is like, man, what's your problem? Can you hear me? Yeah. And Vin just finally turns and looks at him now. This whole time he's just staring straight ahead, turns to look at him, looks at him, and just goes, no.
And you should not send your messages directly into our metal assholes.
Picks him up, he stands up, he's grasping him by the throat, and now...
he's ready to chokeslam him like the Undertaker.
Yeah, and just earlier that school day, nobody was paying attention to Vin. Now everybody's paying attention to Vin, because they're all watching him, lifting him up
in the cafeteria.
And, yeah, so as he's strangling him, it's getting to the point where, like, after the how quickly it... the last issue elevated in from having a conversation at a table into the daughter getting speared. I'm thinking like, all right, this kid's dead. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Just like ready for it. And, eventually, he answers him and he just goes, my sister is out. And he drops Chris to the ground. And that's when like, looks like some grown-ups, some teachers nearby and the kids are all just seeing it. And Vin just says, she's ill. And walks off.
Yeah, this is what I'm really curious about, who is narrating. Because then you get the narration is just behind, I don't even want to try that, sternocleidomastoid muscle, just below the jawline. It is a part of safety mechanism put in place in case the heart is sending too much blood to the brain. If pressure is applied to this sensor, the heart will simply stop sending blood upward through the carotid artery. The brain will quickly die thereafter. And it's just kind of funny reading that, because it's like he's being, whoever is talking about this is being very analytical about the anatomy of a human body.
Yeah.
Like, if you did this, you'd be like, strangle the shit out of him. You wouldn't say all that stuff, you know what I mean? Interesting.
At the 37th minute of this podcast is perfect timing, because they're in the principal's office, and Vision is trying to do everything by the book, and he happens to drop the info and the facts that he's like, well... he's like, I've saved the world 37 times.
Yeah.
And and he mentioned
that. We did that on purpose.
You were saying that. I just was about to cut you off, and I'm just like, we could still make it. Due to editing and the theme song and stuff, it'll probably be like minute 39, so we just effed ourselves on that one. So
we're done. Let's pack it in.
But Vision is just thinking that, like, all right, because they're there, like, all right, we're here because your son just did this at a public act of... you know, harm to another student, an act of violence, and Vision's just kind of passing this off, being like, all right, you know, this will be kind of like a slap on the wrist, and, you know, he'll, whatever, take up attention. Or
the principal's not down for that.
No, the principal, because he actually says something pretty crazy here, too. He's not too shy about it, and he says that you guys are guns.
Yeah.
He calls them guns, because they're weapons. He goes, if my other students... you know, use the weapon against another student or something. This is, you know, they'd face suspension and all that kind of stuff. And he refers to them as guns. And he even calls her Mrs. Vision.
Yeah,
which
she didn't like that.
Yeah, she corrects. She's like, my name, as I've already stated, is Virginia, not Mrs. Vision. But then Principal Waxman is his name. Vision just goes, the issue of our child's status has previously been settled. We are here to talk about this specific incident and how we might move on. And Vision just wants to get through it. And
he wants to get out of there.
Yeah. And he keeps mentioning, he's like, I am the Vision of the Avengers. I have saved this planet 37 times. Each day you live, each breath you take, each beat of your heart, each is due to my actions 37 times over. And we later find out that those are just 37 of the most memorable
ones. Yeah, I know.
Because... you know, over the course of, like, 50 years of history, you know, the pace of the Marvel Universe, who knows how much time has passed since his creation.
And the Vision does a pretty good job of putting the principal in his place, stating that he is an Avenger.
Yeah.
And how will it really look if, you know, his kids get kicked out of school?
Yeah, so the Principal Waxman is pouring himself an alcoholic beverage. Chocolate milk.
Yeah.
Chocolate milk, as he's leaves the scene just calling
cursing,
them.
Cursing, yeah.
Yeah, he goes, shaped fucking metal is what he's calling these people. That they're metal, that are shaped like people, and they're not real. They're guns. They're weapons.
Yep.
And then a funny little cute scene as their Vision and Virginia are flying through the clouds on the way home. She just goes, I love you. He goes, I love you too.
I think you're now starting to see them get a closer real-life human emotional connection.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it slowly, and they're doing it brilliantly because it's building slowly.
And Vision gets a message that that his daughter can be repaired. There's a possibility that they could save his daughter because she's still kind of hooked up and split apart and all that kind of stuff. So he abruptly leaves, which just leaves his wife sitting there, standing there in the front lawn, watches him soar off into the clouds. She gets something out of the floating mailbox, which Marvel needs to come out with this floating mailbox, meaning come up with something so like translucent of a pole that you can just...
It looks like it's... Yeah.
Or if anyone that has like any skills with a hammer could just make this mailbox by spray painting it lime green, and that will be a project for my brother Aaron. So
yeah, I'm getting really giddy about how this comic ends, issue number 2.
Seriously.
I really am.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, if you can do the honors,
honestly,
if you want.
Honestly, I think I'm going to do this mailbox thing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just got a better idea. I'm going to go to Hobby Lobby and get like an old school type mailbox.
Okay.
I am going to spray paint it. I'm going to put the 616 on there, which I had in my notes, but I failed to mention. One of the very first things I noticed, you don't see it on the cover because they removed it from the cover image on the door, as well as the reprint of the cover image on the comic as you're going through.
I wonder why.
But yeah, I don't know why, but when you see them in the actual comic, maybe because it's a fun Easter egg, you see 616 written on their door. That's their house number. To you, does that mean anything?
Oh, boy.
And
I feel like that's an area code of somewhere. I'm thinking wrestling something or other
okay.
is related.
Well,
I have no idea.
It's Marvel related, so.
I don't know.
Yeah, it is. 616, the Marvel 616 universe, which was coined, I think Alan Moore actually coined it back in like the 70s or something, with all of the different Earths, and you know, at that time the DC had a lot of like Earth 1, Earth 2, Earth 3, and all that stuff. And it's a myth that it's possibly was done as a joke, a little playing on a joke of DC being like, oh yeah, well we're calling ourselves Marvel 616 universe.
Yeah.
And ever since then, once they launched the Marvel Ultimate Comics in the year 2000, they would use the 616 universe was the proper Marvel universe continuity from the original Stan Lee, Jack Kirby days, and Ultimate Universe was its own thing. So when people are talking like, hey, I love Spider-Man, like, oh, what's Spider-Man time? I'm like, oh, 616 Spider-Man, amazing, amazing Spider-Man, Peter Parker, you know. So 616 was a thing I noticed immediately when I read this book in October and November, and I'm like, oh, that's cool that their address is 616. Another 616 fun fact is that in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., their bus, quote-unquote bus, the plane that May drives, I'm pretty sure it says 616 on the side of their plane.
Yeah. It's impressive.
Yeah. And then the helicarrier in the Avengers movie has 63 written on the helicarrier, which is 1963 is when the Avengers number one debuted.
Wow.
So those are all fun facts I like noticing, like the little Easter eggs here. So yeah, wanted to mention that. But yeah, the mailbox thing. I'm seriously going to do that, and I'm going to get some string. I'm going to just hang it from the ceiling. I'm not going to, you know, put it outside. Hang it from a tree. I should just hang it from a tree.
Why not?
But I want to just have it part of, like, sitting in the corner of my living room or something, and, yeah, that'll be awesome. But, yeah, she goes into the mailbox. She opens up a box, and what does she find?
She finds a cell phone.
Yes.
And it says code 6161.
Yeah.
Go to videos, press play. And I'm like, huh. And you look, and there she is. Somebody has captured her on video. She has a shovel. Virginia has a shovel in her hand.
Yes.
And she is caught on video burying the Grim Reaper in the backyard.
Yep, we see her carrying the body. The hole's been dug, and she just plops him down and just casually shovels the dirt over. And you see Vin still holding his arm from the fiasco there. And he watched all that happen, and, you know.
Yep.
They probably had a talk when she said, you know, don't tell your father and all that stuff.
And in the very last square, she gets a phone call, and she drops the phone
because
she's startled, and she gets a phone call from an unidentified number. So, and that's where it ends. Woo!
Now it's time for issue number 3, In and Out. And we have a pretty great cover. Even though this comic has been extremely serious and the tone of it. But the covers kind of remain happy in a way. We see a bunch of the Vision family portraits that are framed in the back. And Vin played baseball. And
Viv was
a ballerina. And they have the cover image of them in there phasing through the door. And him hovering over the White House lawn and all that stuff. But she's sweeping up with Grim Reaper's scythe and basically sweeping him under the carpet, but the carpet is a layer of grass, and there's so much crazy imagery in that. Like, from afar, it looks like a broom and a rug. Yeah. And you look a little closely in the context, and you're like, okay, that's not what it is.
I love the look on her face, like, well, I'm not doing anything. what I'm sweeping.
We open up this issue with kids vandalizing the Vision's garage. These kids are just random kids.
A little punk kid.
We still have this narration going on. Still don't know who it is. One kid's on lookout. He's not too sure about it. And the other punk is... They're like, oh, what do you call robots? Like, when you want to call them names and stuff. And what's a bad name for a robot? And they're kind of figuring out what he should spray paint on the door. And as he figures it out, he starts spray painting. We don't completely see what it is.
Yeah.
But then we see a Vision hand. We don't know which member of the family it is. Probably not Viv, because she's in the hospital and all torn to bits. But we see a Vision hand basically just reach through after he had spray painted, smacks him into the garage, because he doesn't phase through the garage. So I'm assuming
no, he certainly doesn't.
Their phasing powers, I'm assuming, unless she could probably control whether she wanted to phase him through or not, but Kitty Pryde has phasing powers. And she, when she holds on to someone, she can phase those people too. She has an awesome moment in Astonishing X-Men that is, you know, like, oh, it's so awesome. But anyways, where she phases objects and stuff. And basically smacks the kid down to the ground and calls out to the other boy. He's kind of freaking out. And Virginia says, stay as you are and I will not harm you. And in the back, you see written on the garage door,
go home, socket lovers.
So socket lovers is the...
It's like the I would... derogatory term.
That's the word I was looking for.
It's like the... You know, well, we all know the derogatory words for other people that exist. We don't have to say them, but that's what we came up with.
And as we have her in the house now, and the lights are down, and Virginia is on the phone, and she's trying to get a hold of Vision... And she's kind of freaking out, and this is when we start getting the history behind the Everbloom that was given from Mount Wundagore from the Scarlet Witch. And this, out of all the issues, this is probably the one that confuses me the most, just for all the Everbloom stuff, because it's just like, all right, there's a lot of crazy stuff happening in here. So we're getting some crazy stuff. We have... Agatha, I think her name is, who is the one that taught the Scarlet Witch, and she's a ghost in the Scarlet Witch series that's going on right now, and she's like just as a ghost, and she's talking to her and stuff like that. But we see her with the cat, and the cat's like ready to nibble on this this Everbloom, and we're just getting some. Apparently, when you consume it, it says you can somehow see the future, and that's. That's what, now this is starting to actually go into my head a little bit. Like, literally right now is when this makes sense to me. Prior to starting this sentence, I was still confused on this on the third, fourth read through. And now I'm just like, holy shit, I know what this means now. So we still have the narration, not sure exactly where it's coming from here yet. But we go back to the hospital.
Look at our boy Tony Stark is there.
Yes, Tony is the first Avengers character... Marvel character outside of Grim Reaper to make an appearance now, issue 3 of this Vision series. And, you know, for anyone who's never read Iron Man comics and you just seen the movies, I think you know enough being like, you know, Iron Man is one of the perfect characters you could have in that situation. So, even though in this continuity, Iron Man has nothing to do with creating the Vision like he did in the movie continuity, so that stuff was all Hank Pym and Ultron and stuff like that, so. But... Vision has a way of bringing his daughter back, a way that, I was about to say Robert Downey, Tony Stark, a way that Tony Stark doesn't quite agree with it because he's like, well, this could kill you and destroy you, and this would cause like an outage for like everything.
Vision doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, and
it's his daughter.
Yeah, and he says, what the hell does he even say here? Tony suggests that he should shut himself down for this, and he goes, the sensors are necessary for communicating with the incorporeal.
They're nerves. Making up words. Yeah, Tom King is so genius. Yeah, he makes up words for this comic.
Incorporeal nerves. they will remain functional. Now, please, Tony, let us begin. Tony's like, are you? All right. Whatever you want. Here we
very
go.
Very reluctant.
He pulls the old Frankenstein switch, basically, and lever goes down. Huh. Electrocution's going on, and it's just like, you got, like, some kind of Bride of Frankenstein shit going on.
I absolutely love the dialogue here at the end, too, of this page. Tony Stark absolutely wants to turn it off because it's killing Vision.
Yep.
I love what Vision says here so nonchalantly. Tony Stark, you are my colleague. You are a fellow Avenger. You are my oldest friend. But if you touch that button, I will kill you.
it's his subtleness is brilliant. And then even like Tony's now kind of stand back. He's like,
what?
He's
like, oh yeah, Jesus, Vision.
Yeah, he's like, Jesus, Vision. And he's just yelling, she is my daughter and I will save her. She's still going, mother, 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 mother. And then finally she like sits up like Undertaker style to make another reference to the Undertaker.
Father!
Wonder if Tom King is a WWF fan.
Clearly.
Yeah, father hugs Vision. Tony's just looking at this and the narration goes, later, Captain America asked Iron Man how it all went.
Fine.
Iron
normal.
Man said. And, I mean, everything was normal. And there they are, smoking computers as the father is reunited with the daughter. And we cut back to some more Wundagore shit going on. Some more just deep stuff with the cat was nibbling on that Everbloom that's now in the Vision's living room. And the cat's getting stabbed because it ate that, and then the cat gets stabbed by Agatha, and it runs off, and the cat comes back, but as it comes closer, it like starts morphing into like this panther type of character.
This is one of those things that I think is going to come full circle
by
the time the issue is completely, or the series is completely over with.
Yeah, and there's something like with the old Everbloom thing, I can't wait to talk about it off mic because it's something that happens in a later issue beyond this book, but I'm excited to talk about it. So yeah, now this panther who has eaten this thing has got this blade stuck in it, and it like starts nibbling on her, and she takes the blade out, she stabs it again, and just back and forth of like them eating each other and stabbing each other, basically. And it ends with this panther cat thing just
eating each other and stabbing each other. Something you'll never say again.
Exactly. Not till next week.
Yeah.
Agatha and sitting there, and the Everbloom leaves are sitting there, and blood starts to go onto the Everbloom. And then we cut back to the Everbloom now in the house, once again, next to that vase from Zenla, a gift from my favorite character, the Silver Surfer. We got a ding-dong at the door.
Guess who's home?
Yeah, and she's, you know, yelling at Vin for taking, you know, he's got a study or something like that, and he's like, well, you told me I should read this or something, so he is studying.
Doesn't
or something.
He say something funny? Oh, I know, so her son is studying, and he's just sitting on the couch, and she says, Vin, does your suspension from school somehow equate you to being permanently suspended upon this couch?
She's like, answer the door. He's like, what?
I love how just that subtle, just she's so irritated with him. That's her way of kind of getting a shot in there.
And here's the weird thing, and I wonder if Vision did this just for the, it works great for the comic, but I wonder if he did it personally for an emotional thing for his family. Because Vision and his daughter Viv, who is now revived, were the ones at the door. Like, this is their house. He could phase through the door, if you will. But it's great for the storytelling, and it's just kind of weird that he did that. But it was a great emotional surprise that Virginia was not expecting. You know, when there's a ding-dong, the opposite of that is she's not going to think that her husband and her daughter are going to be on the other side of that door. So, and in my notes I wrote, enter sexy time.
Yep.
Vision tries telling Viv that Iron Man talked to S.H.I.E.L.D. and that they tried locating the Grim Reaper, but he was gone, so...
Yeah, he's trying to be serious and talk business of the day's events.
He's got his pajama pants on.
Like, he needs
they gotta, sell these Vision pajamas, which are just, you know,
they're
normal pajamas,
green, yeah.
But I just want all green Vision. He's got Vision slippers and stuff, too. But yeah, he's talking serious, like you said.
And his wife comes into the bedroom with some sexy clothing on.
Yeah.
I didn't think I would ever think a synthezoid would be attractive, but they do a really good job in here.
Yeah, and
thinking that she actually has sexual appeal.
Yeah, and this is where I start to get sexually confused at just being like, next time I'm going to walk past a computer, like, what's going to be going on through my head?
What are you going to Google?
Never mind that.
Yeah, right.
As Vision still continues the conversation about how Grim Reaper... He was attacked, but, you know, you said he ran away, but S.H.I.E.L.D. can't find him, and S.H.I.E.L.D. can find everybody, and it's not making sense, and she does the perfect thing to distract man.
Yeah, I was just going to say, she basically is, this is real life right here.
Yeah.
So she pretty much does what other women can do, and get the man off, I didn't want me to say it quite like that.
Yeah.
Get him to think about something
else. Get his mind off.
Other than, yeah, there we go.
Mm-hmm. and then, they're closing off, and it's a good, nice little silhouette of them and through their bedroom window, and then we see Go Home Socket Lovers on the garage once again. And just when that would seem like a good end to the issue, we still go back to Wundagore, where, Agatha is now digging into the body of this cat/panther, and she's, like, eating, like, the stomach or something, and the details of the narration is going on about, like, something about the taste of the cat's stomach and bitter and metallic, and she's just talking about all these rituals, and once again it's just a bunch of things that's very off base of what the comic's for, but like you said, it's gonna have
easily
gonna have
together.
One of these big payoffs, I even got another theory that just jumped in, and I don't normally think about how things will turn out, but anyways, that's what these read-throughs are doing awesome, is that I'm learning some new things as we go on here. So, yeah, she, like keels over because of it, and she, like, starts coughing up some stuff, and she's just, she wakes up, basically, from passing out. And the narration of whoever the narration is from goes that she needed to understand her vision that Agatha had. Then Agatha speaks. She goes, "In late September, with the leaves just beginning to hint at the fall to come, the Visions of Virginia moved into their house at 616 Hickory Branch Lane, Arlington, Virginia, 21301. And where does that sound familiar?
Oh, boy. You're going to put me on the spot here.
Well, if you go back to the very, very opening, the first dialogue in Vision number 1, in late September, with the leaves just beginning to hint at the fall. So this is our reveal that Agatha has been the narrator.
Yeah.
And there's a later reveal that happens with Agatha later that makes some of this this Everbloom stuff snap into my head, and I'm going to say it very shortly because off mic, because we're soon to go on to the next issue.
And this is issue number 4, Balls in the Air.
Issue 4.
Woo!
This is the issue that went after I read it where I'm just like...
Yep, I'm on board forever.
And I said, I'm like, here's the description of issue 4. And I just go, issue 4.
Yeah.
Like, this is the issue that everyone's going to be talking about. So what we have here is that we've got some football going on. So
we got some Peanuts action here.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And, like, pulling the football away from Charlie Brown /Vin. Yeah, and so the kids are, you know, just having a normal playtime in the yard, and... you know, he phases through the football, and she's getting upset that it's happening.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And she throws the football at his head, but it phases through his head, and all that stuff's going on.
The man catches it.
Yeah, and Vision kind of questions it, because he's holding up a football that says, "Fighting Redskins," and has a picture of an Indian on it, and Balls in the Air is the title, as you mentioned. And they're talking about how... That is the former mascot. They recently changed the mascot at school. That was the old one, because you're starting to have that in the real world where, even Kewaskum was dealing with that because of the Kewaskum Indians, there's a lot of things about them wanting to paint over the Indian mural that's in the gym and stuff like that. And so now they're kind of dealing it, you know, and, you know, they're Redskins themselves, you know, like, so there's a lot of just that kind of imagery. And as they're doing that, Virginia is in the house watching over, and we find out that that phone rings that you mentioned at the end of issue
two.
Yeah, that there was an incoming call from an unidentified number that rings like every day at 2 p.m., and she finally answers it, yes. And we turn to the page, and she's like, come on, one extra second it's going to take us to find out what's going on here.
Yeah.
And she's having this conversation. She's setting up a plan, makes a plan with the anonymous caller, and we're not really sure what's going on, but we know that there's going to be a meeting of some sort. And then we cut back to some more football, and Vision launches the ball up in the air for Vin, and then and this is awesome when Viv just phases through Vin catch the ball.
I was just going
to
say, her knee goes right through her head. Yeah. And this doesn't even, like, phase him. You know what I mean?
Well, literally it
is phasing him.
But, yeah, instead that would, you know, knock him out or something and hurt her knee. But
that's funny. I love that. Yeah. I love how they have that little stuff in there.
So they return to school. Both of the kids are back to school after him choking out the kid, Chris.
Awkward.
Krinsky, I think his last name is. We'll find out more about that later. And then we have Viv returning for the first time since being decapitated, which I'm sure a lot of kids can experience when going back to school after being decapitated.
Yep.
Or not.
I know I did.
Not decapitated, I guess. Just halved.
Yeah, it was something much. Yeah, it was something much better.
Yeah,
less
yeah,
brutal.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a
her
swipe.
Head was still attached.
Yeah.
Her bottom body wasn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're kind of going through the halls, and now they are being looked at. So if you remember when Vin, nobody even noticed him, like, there's moments when they're all looking at them, but then there's moments where they can be invisible, and now everyone's looking at them, and they feel hated. And this is when Chris Krinsky, or CK as they call him, comes up to Viv, because we remember him last.
Yep, he was wanting to know where she was because they're lab partners.
Yep, they're lab partners, and he's talking about right now that his dad, he told the principal we're not supposed to be partners anymore. After the fight, I mean, like, it's dangerous or messed up or something, you know? And she agrees. She's like, yes, I know. And he says, he's like, well, he's like, I kind of like you having you as a partner, and I don't want to stop having you as a partner. And it's kind of like, in a way, like, part of me was thinking, like, all right, is he, like, toying with her emotions here?
Or is it a little bit of a crush?
Well, yeah, either that, like, that's definitely, like, what you're getting. But I'm thinking, like, ahead where I'm just like, shit, is he setting her up for some public embarrassment that's going to make her flip out, like, publicly and do something? Like, is he being a jerk or something? But, you know, right now it feels pretty legitimate, you know, some legit stuff going on here. And this is what's kind of interesting. We'll repeat this dialogue later, but it starts to rain, and he goes, I should have brought an umbrella. He goes, doesn't it kind of bother you, like, a machine and water and all that? And she goes, no, it does not bother me. It just goes through me, you know, because she has the power to let the rain phase through her.
I like how she phases through the door just like it's nothing.
Yeah.
Like when she's walking out of the school, I'm just going to go through this door.
Just real casual. And this is our first big Avengers moment into this entire series. So we had Tony Stark last issue, but now we open up and there's this giant monster. And I say giant because his name is Giganto. And does Giganto look familiar to you at all? I only say this as a setup for some facts that I have said.
Clearly. Yeah. No, he really doesn't.
Well, for hardcore Marvel fans, right away you're like, oh shit, I know who that character is, because he first appeared in Fantastic Four, issue number 1, back in 1961.
Oh, I read that yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah.
Created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, this character was in that comic. A monster who's led by the Mole Man. But he's on the cover of Fantastic Four, issue number 1. So this is like an homage, if you will. You know, I'm sure Giganto constantly just causes havoc like this every now and then. So this isn't like, oh, this is happening during Fantastic Four time or something. It's just like,
he pops up.
It's Giganto again. And the Avengers are there. We got some Sam Wilson, Captain America. We got some Iron Man. We got Vision there. And what's going on is that we finally have a phone call between Virginia and Vision during this entire battle. And what's kind of interesting is that there's a big fight going on, but we're kind of, the dialogue is concentrating on the story of the family again. And that's what's just, like, kind of cool about this, where you're just like, to him, it's like, yeah, I'm kind of in the middle of something.
Yeah, I know.
He's like, can we settle, you know, I'll be home later, we could talk about this, kind of, you know, I'm at work, you know, and other people saying that, or maybe, like, doing, you know, like, other work, normal work things, not fighting off monsters from New York City or something. And so, yeah, that's what's going on there. And she makes an excuse for herself when she leaves the house and she flies through the middle of the night and she shows up at the door of someone. And that someone is most likely going to be her anonymous caller, the person who is blackmailing her with the video that she has of burying the Grim Reaper. Because that is exactly what we have when we find out whose father is it?
I can't remember Chris. Now. Okay, thank you.
Chris Kinski, however you say their name. Chris?
The kid from high school.
Yep, the kid from high school that's creating a little crush and relationship with Viv. It's his dad, and that had done that about, with the video. He said that he, they make a reference here. He goes, do you want cookies? Yeah. I made cookies. don't put a cookie tray in front of her, you know, that's never good. But what he explains is that he was originally going to introduce himself because their kids were lab partners, and he refers to, like, one of them as Thing, you know, like, Thing, so now we've got... you know, robot and guns and weapons and Thing and you people, and now Thing is being, like, referenced in here.
Yeah, he is now really crossing the line. She came there probably to be somewhat civil, maybe a little bit.
Maybe to make a deal, being like, what do you want?
Yeah,
you know, and...
but it soon is not that.
Yeah, so he explains that, you know, he had good intentions to begin because he was going to introduce himself, being like, well, it's like, for the sake of our kids... I'm going to do that. And that's when there was no answer at the door, and then he decided to go around back because he heard, like, a noise, and that's when he witnessed her digging up the grave and putting a Grim Reaper in there, and that's when he started filming it on his phone, and that's when he's like, okay, you know, now it makes sense that he doesn't want his son hanging out with them, you know, with the vision, with the things, you know. And Chris comes down the stairs as he starts to overhear their conversation back and forth, knowing that, you know, his crush's mom is now there talking to his dad. And he pulls out a gun. And he goes, I will do what I have to protect my boy. I will do anything. You hear it, lady? Anything. And then he's like, Dad, is that you? What does she say?
We belong here.
So she keeps kind of fighting. She goes, I belong here earlier. She says, we belong here now. Yeah,
fighting with her words.
Yep. And... Chris is a little confused of what's going on. He's yelling at Virginia to go away. This is my neighborhood. It ain't yours. Just go. And a big fight, and it's escalating to the point where, like, you're flipping faster in these pages.
Well, and it eventually escalates to the point where he actually pulls the gun on her.
Yes, and we're getting very close. It's within a foot of her face. And she goes, in the end, everything will be good. And we still see, like, question mark off word balloon just going, Dad. The gun fires off three times, bullet shells are flying, the narration is still going on from, you know.
And you're led to believe that she gets shot three times right point blank in the face.
Because we're left with a smoking gun, her eyes are always kind of like that, but she's kind of like hunched over in a way, and it kind of looks like maybe she didn't phase in time, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe she wasn't expecting that. Except she yells out, no.
She did phase in time.
She did, and unfortunately, those three bullets, looks like all, at least two, if not all three of them, hit his son, Chris. So the dad fired the gun to protect himself and the family, not knowing that, you know, she could phase, and maybe in a panic, she didn't know.
It looks like one for sure, he gets shot in the head and the chest, at least one each.
So now he's holding him, and his son is clearly, so graphic.
It is.
The way
it's sad.
His head is back, and like he's yelling at her. And
oh,
says,
just looking
at
that is just churns my stomach.
And he's flipping out, just saying, "You killed my boy, boy. You killed my boy. I'm gonna kill you." And after this,
and then in a panic,
if only she had that cookie sheet. And
I know
he was gonna serve cookies.
But in a panic, it kind of looks like she takes her fist and cracks him over the skull.
Yeah, and he's knocked out right next to the son, who had, you know, is clearly dead. The son is dead, and the crack is like, all right, is that his neck cracking? Is that it's just head with her fist? We're all just like, what the heck is going on here? And then we see the Indian logo from the beginning on the football up against the wall, hanging like a little pennant school spirit type of deal. I'm sure he probably played ball in his day and stuff, and the blood splatters onto the wall, onto that, and that concludes what I kept saying is issue four. Yeah. Issue four.
Issue four is what hooked me.
This, oh my god. Now we're on to issue number five, The Villainy You Teach Me. We have a different narration this time. Normally we've been opening up with Agatha's narration throughout all of these stories, but now we have a different narration, and this one, Virginia is watching over Leon, and Leon is the name of the dad who seems to be okay. He's knocked out, he's in the hospital, he's not okay in that sense, but he did not die with that ending of that last issue. I gotta say, this narration is a pet peeve of mine for any comic book. Not only for those first three issues when we didn't know that it was Agatha narrating the whole time. Now we have a different narration. It's like, okay, is it her talking? Who's talking? And this is one of the greatest things that when I started writing some comics of my own that were seeking artists to draw and some scripts that I just have laying around, one of the first things for Strike Girl, my superhero short film I did, the very first opening panel of my Strike Girl number one, I did narration through the whole thing, and you don't know, like, who's saying it.
Yeah.
And it's funny where I'm just like, it is one of my biggest comic pet peeves, because you could go a whole issue, if not a whole three issues, and never know who's speaking, and what voice you're reading it in, and stuff like that. And it's funny that I found myself doing that myself when I wrote it, where I'm just like, well, it's a comic thing for a reason, so... She's floating over the hospital bed. We've got the article about the son dying through the... there was a shooting, and it was being ruled as a homicide, and, you know, she's kind of very scarily hovering over his bed, and the shadows cast upon him.
Yeah.
And, but the narration says, I am a Jew. So it's like, okay, wait, where is this narration coming from? We still got it going on here. But now we cut to the morgue, and we have Chris sitting there in the morgue, and... they're officially writing it out about the chest wounds, the gunshot wounds in the chest and the head, and it's being ruled as a homicide and all that. Now we cut back to some more avenging going on. So we have the current Thor, and they're fighting some villains that aren't recognizable, and they don't even say who they are. Vision's fighting, and, you know, a beam from a villain's going through his chest, and, you know, all this stuff is going on while we have this narration being like, all right, who the heck is this narration coming from? Well, we have our answer. It is a school teacher that is teaching, he's reading the works of Shakespeare, I believe, for Vin. And I think there's that reference to the Shakespeare thing when he's reciting the poetry and all that stuff.
Yep.
Remember the whole the masturbation thing in a later issue? So here's the teacher. And then this is really moving along quickly as the narration continues. Because now we see Viv in the library, and what is she doing?
She's looking at a yearbook, and she's looking somebody up in particular.
Yep, Chris Kinski, he has a quote that says, and it's going to be very important, the quote says, it's all about the love. And she rips out that page, she kind of holds it close to her chest, she phases out of the school.
She's not feeling good. She does not feel good about what has transpired in the previous issue.
And we cut... immediately over to Matthew Lynn, who is a homicide detective. We have more narration details on all of these extra characters. That's one thing. When you had mentioned that the narrator was giving just all these crazy details and saying like all these like words that we can't pronounce and stuff, what we failed to mention is that right from issue one, like, we heard a backstory on like George and Nora, and we just like, we get so much background character facts through the Agatha's narration, so she knows all of this shit, and she's like given us a complete history of Matthew Lynn here, and like the years of him going to college and joining the army and coming back, and, you know, I think he worked like retail or something, and then he couldn't believe that he made detective, and like, it's just crazy we're getting so much information about this character that essentially probably maybe doesn't have much to do eventually. I don't know, but it's just kind of interesting how much detail we get from all this kind of stuff too. And they did the same for like George and Nora and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But Virginia, she goes, don't worry, Everything is normal. She says that somewhere. Oh, yeah, she has a meeting with...
two kids.
With the kids. Yep. They're at the family table, and she's talking about everything's going to be normal, even though all this stuff's going on here, and, you know...
Everything.
The cops.
Everything's going to be normal. Everything. Everything.
Yeah, Matt...
We... And then, yeah,
she Hulk smashes through
the
table.
It's almost like she's short-circuiting a little bit.
Yeah, some of those glitches that Vision may have recognized.
We will continue our discussion, discussion, and she loses her mind, screams everything is normal, and then there she goes slams the table.
Yeah, and just says the...
What is wrong with us?
There's just so much craziness, and Vin is taking some of the stuff he learned from... his Shakespeare class, the poetry, and he questions his mom. He says, you know, if you prick me, do I bleed?
Love it.
Like, that's amazing because he's so inquisitive on, once again, right back to that first issue when that classmate of his just turned over that message and said, are you normal? And he just sat there and kind of questioned himself, and now he's wondering, you know, does he bleed? And this is going to be interesting here. I'm going to have you... Okay, we're back now. Vision is in the interrogation room at the, you know, with the detective,
yep,
with Matthew Lynn. And he's starting to question on, like, you know, where were you and all this kind of stuff. This is when it gets crazy here. Let me cut to it in my notes here. Vision starts recalling the 37 specific times that he saved the world while Vision explains where he was the night of the incident. So this is the... time when Vision starts, you know, wondering how to word some of this.
Yeah, thing. Well, because right before he starts talking about that, he's pretty much saying he is not going to cooperate with the detective.
So what I'm going to have you do here, I did some extremely extensive research because, once again, for the second time, they're bringing up the 37 times they saved a world. Well... I happen to have all of the issue numbers for exactly those 37 times.
I believe you. That's impressive.
So, as we go through here, I'm going to have you... They're all labeled here, so I'm going to have you say the number and the thing.
Okay, in no particular order. Number one, the Sentinel Strike.
Well, that took place in Avengers Volume 1, issue number 103, September of 1972. And I've got the cover up here all queued up. For, well, me and you, so
yeah.
The listeners at home, you can, you know, screw off. The Avengers issue number 103 here shows a Sentinel, which is one of the main recurring villains of the X-Men universe. And you have all the Avengers, you got Thor and Iron Man and Captain America and Vision and Hawkeye, and they're all fighting basically the Sentinel Strike. Normally it's an X-Men thing. I haven't read this story, but what I did here, because I did all the research, I'm going to read all 37 of these comics to get, like, to
you
get
want to know
more
the backstory.
Because Tom King picked these here for some reason, and he's recalling them here. So
okay,
that was
well,
number one.
That was number one. Number two, the Proctor War.
Well, the first appearance of Proctor, which is a character, was Avengers number 344 in 1992. We were in second grade when that happened.
Holy crap.
Important issues with the Vision in Avengers 348 to 361. So that's when the Proctor showed up in 344, but the Proctor War, issue 348 through 361. And 360 and 361, the Proctor held Vision prisoner and transferred minds between him and an alternate version of Vision. So there was a lot of craziness where, like, Vision, like, had his mind taken away from him. And, like, you know, we think Vision's all powerful and all this kind of stuff. So I'm very much intrigued on seeing him being being in a very fragile state of mind. And but, yeah, so issues 348 to 361, and most importantly, 360 and 361 for some Vision shit that's important. So.
All right. Number three, Ultron.
Ultron, Avengers number 54 and 55 in 1968 is when Ultron first showed up. Issue number 54, though, he was disguised as the Crimson Cowl, which is interesting because we have a nearby comic book store that we keep talking about.
That's
that
ridiculous.
That I'm their first subscriber for, opening up on August 3rd online and August 6th in store for their comic book club meetings and all that stuff. But the Crimson Cowl was an identity that the Ultron took, just he was disguised as the Crimson Cowl. But in the next issue, issues 55, is when he was revealed as Ultron. Avengers 57 to 58, Vision, who is the product of Ultron's creation, destroys Ultron with the help from the Avengers. So upon Vision's creation, he's able to destroy Ultron in that same issue arc, and those over like those two issues or so. So that is when he mentions Ultron being an important moment, that's what it means.
Number four, Immortus.
Well, Immortus first appeared in Avengers number 10 in 1964. He eventually became Kang the Conqueror, who actually appeared 2 months earlier in Avengers number 8, who actually first appeared as Rama Tut a year prior in Fantastic Four number 963 as his original identity, Nathaniel Richards. That's a lot of confusing stuff. So Kang the Conqueror had like all these other identities, so this whole Immortus thing was in Avengers number 10, but so later on, like, he was Kang the Conqueror, who was in issue 8. Like, Kang the Conqueror is this, like, time traveler villain. And he's done a lot of, I think, a lot of Fantastic Four stuff. He was, Avengers right away in the early years of the Avengers. And he was most recently in the first arc of the Uncanny Inhumans. I think, like, issues 1 through 5 of this present 2015-2016 run. There was an awesome story with Kang the Conqueror, but that's Immortus in a nutshell.
Number five, Thanos and his heroes.
And his hordes.
Oops, hordes.
Thanos has no heroes. His own hero is himself. Thanos and his hordes, which is his collection of outcasts and criminals. You know what? I was saying this, I was getting all caught up here, because I do have all the awesome... pictures, cover issues queued up, even from Vision's first appearance as this cool like embossed
the chromium cover.
Yeah, let me see where we are in the timeline so I can remember to flip this too. Hold with us. Here's issue 57 with Vision's Behold the Vision. Has him, like, over there towering over the Avengers and stuff, because he was treated as a villain at first, until they found out, you know, he didn't, you know, he's a unconscious creation of Ultron, and he helped them defeat him and all that stuff. We've got Immortus, who kind of looks like King the Conqueror there on that cover of issue 10 of the Avengers. And now here we are, back up to speed here. If you're following along at home, Thanos and his hordes, his collection of outcasts and criminals from all over the galaxy. Thanos first appeared in Iron Man number 55 in 1973. His first Avengers appearance was issue 125, which was 1 year later. So this is the first time, whole year later, when he met the Avengers. It's just a big cosmic drawing of him, huge mouth, and like they're all like all the Avengers. Scarlet Witch is there, Vision's there, Cap is there, Thor is there. And yeah, it's cool for the first time that the Avengers and Thanos have come across in issue number, 125.
Number six, Atlantis Attacks.
It's a crossover event in 1989. Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 23 was the beginning of it, and it leaked over to the Avengers Annual number 18, which is probably where Vision came into it. But it was a crossover that happened with almost every Marvel annual that year. And I'm not sure if that was done ever before or ever after, or if that's a thing, but it was interesting that all of the annuals, which, you know, a year into every series, they'll just kind of do a supersized issue and have some backup stories and, you know, sometimes be separate from the ongoing yearly story. It's kind of just your fun anniversary issue in a way. So all of the Marvel titles, they synced them up that this the Atlantis attacks crossed over all of the Marvel annuals, starting with Spider-Man. And now I'm very much excited. I got the list of that saved so I can go and reread all those and stuff.
All right. Number seven is Loki.
Loki, who is the first villain ever in Avengers number one way back in 1963. So, but what's interesting is that that is not when, you know, Vision didn't come to like issue like 57 or 60 or somewhere around there, 60, 57. So he wasn't there for Loki, and it was so hard to cross-reference when Loki like kept fighting the Avengers. So I have no idea where Loki and Vision first met. So that's one of the facts I could not find.
Wow.
You idiot internet.
Number 8 is Emperor Doom.
Emperor Doom. We have January 1st, 1987, in a Marvel graphic novel, number 27. They had a graphic novel series. So issue 27 of the graphic novel series. Marvel's, they allowed, that series allowed creators to tell more grown-up stories. So that happened in, I think I had a cover of that, but I think that one's just out of order here. But what's interesting is that that happened in there. I never knew much about the graphic novel series, but now I'm kind of intrigued to find, you know, to read this Doom story that happened in issue 27. So, yeah.
All right. Number 9, Mephisto.
Mephisto, yes. He first appeared in Silver Surfer, issue number 3, in 1968. But that's not when he would have met the Vision. And his first appearance with the Avengers was Avengers number 173 in 1978. And I had it here, but my...
technical problems.
Oh, you know what I think I did? I think I screen-capped all of the crossover for those Atlantis issues. So that's why... Because I was going to go back and like read all those things.
Of course.
So I think that's where... yeah. But anyways, Mephisto, Avengers 173, if you want to read that.
All right, number 10, The Space Phantom.
The Space Phantom. First appeared in Avengers number 2, 1963. He is a servant of Immortus, who we had mentioned earlier. Avengers number 102 is when the Space Phantom, is that what it is? Yep, Space Phantom in the Avengers. That's when he comes back, because that's when Vision's on the team. So issue 102 of the Avengers, if you want to recall when Vision started reacting to him. And what's cool is that I'm pretty sure, like, oh yeah, it says, my brother, the Grim Reaper. So the Grim Reaper's on this cover here, and I think, like, I think it deals with some more Wonder Man stuff, and Grim Reaper even goes, that human body in there can be yours, Vision. Now help me kill the Avengers or I'll destroy it. So yeah, I think he's trying to save his brother in a way, because his brother's brainwaves are with Vision. But the Space Phantom appears as well, but Grim Reaper's on that cover, so.
All right, number 11, The Witch on Wundagore Mountain.
Well, we've been hearing about the Wundagore Mountain with that Everbloom, the gift from the Scarlet Witch. Well, when Vision would have dealt with this was The Witch of the Wundagore Mountain is an Avengers number 187 back in 1979, and... we have the Scarlet Witch in a very villainous pose in this one, and she's got all the Avengers upside down. We have Ms. Marvel, we got the Falcon, we got Captain America, we got Quicksilver, we have, I want to say that's Janet Van Dyne, the Wasp, and then we have Wonder Man, who is in his like Hollywood-looking persona. I've got a hero clicks of that outfit there. But the Witch of on Wundagore Mountain, and it deals just with this ancient artifact crown that, like, all this shit, like, I just did some research on like what these are so I can go back and read these stories, but that's issue 187 if you want to read about that he saved the world.
Yeah. Number 12, The Serpent's Crown.
Okay, yep, this goes into the crown thing that I started to talk about. It's the powerful object that made its first appearance in the Submariner issue number 9. So we have this the serpent lady who's kind of in like this toga thing. She's wearing this crown, and she's got Namor, who's, you know, the king of the sea or ruler of Atlantis and all that stuff. And that's where this object first appeared. But for Avengers storyline-wise, what he's referring to, it's an Avengers storyline from issues 141 to 149. So, and specifically, issue 147 shows Scarlet Witch holding this crown that's got just like a bunch of like little snakes on and stuff, and it's got some magical power, and everybody's like in a frantic in the back, and the Avengers and Vision's there, and it's a war against the world, all out action in the mighty Marvel manner. And Vision yells out, "Flee, my love, quickly, unless you escape with that serpent crown. All of us are doomed." And, yeah, so that's a storyline from 141 to 149. So that's a cool thing to read.
All right, we've got number 13, The Crossing, and number 14, Ultra again.
Ultron again, yep.
Ultron again.
The Crossing, Avengers 390 to 395, which is a story from 1995. So, yeah, and I'm not sure what's going on. I think we got some Wonder Man and Quicksilver knocked out there, and a little girl's being captured, and there's this creature, I'm not sure, just some kind of caveman, barbaric-looking character. I'm not sure who that is, but if you want to read when Vision helped save the world, then that's Avengers 390 from 1995. And then you said Ultron again. Yep. And over the time of Ultron's creations, there's like over 18 Ultrons. There's like Ultron 5 and Ultron 6 and all that kind of stuff. So when they started repeating Ultron, that's when I'm like, okay, I'm not going to pinpoint any more Ultron stories because there's so many. So
move on. Number 15, Operation Galactic Storm.
A 19-part crossover in 1992, starting...
So they did crossovers all the way back. I didn't know that.
Hell yeah, they did.
All right.
And starting with Captain America, number 398. So if you want to start reading that crossover, you start with Captain America 398, which shows Captain America, and there's this giant robot that's he's fighting, and somebody, maybe it's Rick Jones, I think, is in his other arm, and versus the Wrath of the War Star. And, a 19-part Galactic Storm crossover starts with Captain America.
I think I might be interested in checking that out sometime. Yeah. I've never heard of it ever in my life, but I don't know. 19 parts in 92, I'd love to see how they tie it all together.
And if it's one of the 37 specific times that Avengers helped save the planet, then it's worth reading.
Number 16, I want to say Jocasta.
Jocasta.
Jocasta, Bride of Ultron.
Bride of Ultron first appeared in Avengers 162 back in 1977, created by... Ultron, I was about to say the actual creators, but, I mean, comic-wise, he was created by Ultron. The character, she was created by Ultron. He used the brainwave patterns of Janet Van Dyne, a.k.a. the Wasp. So the Avengers are at war with the most indestructible, unstoppable menace of all, Ultron, once again. And we don't see Jocasta on here, and what's interesting is that... I think there was a reference to Jocasta Easter egg in Avengers 2, Age of Ultron, where I think it was like, they were going through the files when he wants to get a new Jarvis, and he sees like Friday in there, and like there's all this, I think Jocasta is one of these files in there. It's one of those things that, hey, maybe they'll do it like 10 years later, but I think it was mostly a fan service being like, fans being like, oh my god, they just referenced Jocasta, and that's all they needed to do to, you know, get yourself all... excited. All
right, number 17, The Morgan Conquest.
Avengers Volume 3, Issue Number 1, which is in 1998. So if I had just said Avengers Number 1, that's not the one. That's 1963. Avengers Volume 3, Number 1, in 1998. So yeah, that one, I'm not really sure what the Morgan is, if that's a character or a place, but it's a pretty sweet... It launched the... your man, Kurt Busiek, wrote The Avengers.
Nice.
So he relaunched it, Volume 3, first issue, and that's what started this whole Morgan Conquest. But it has all the Avengers and Giant Man's on there, Iron Man, Beast is there. We got Hawkeye and Scarlet Witch and all that. Vision's not on the cover for that one, but that starts up there with your boy, Kurt Busiek.
Number 18, Necronomus.
Avengers 128. Back in 1974.
Man, this goes all over the place.
Yeah,
I'm
pretty
impressed.
Much. Yeah, and he said, you know, no particular order, which is true. Year-wise, we're jumping all over the place. So you have Scarlet Witch on the cover. She goes, "My hex power is useless against Necrodamus." She goes, "I'm trapped, trapped, and bewitched, bothered, and dead." You just see some mysterious hands, which I'm assuming are from Necrodamus there. But and then the heads of Vision and Thor and Iron Man are looking down as Scarlet Witch is being attacked, and that story is from Avengers 128.
Number 19, the Korvac Saga.
Korvac Saga. Remember when I'm on the other on the For Comics Sake issue podcast when I was saying like Karnak and I said Korvac, but you're like, no, Karnak. I'm like, oh yeah, Korvac is this other famous villain. You're like, that's weird. I never heard of him. Here's that story. And this one's awesome. This is where I... Oh, crap, I lost my place. But I can easily find it because of the characters that are on this issue. The Korvac Saga began with Avengers number 167 in 1978. And let me read this cover of this comic. Behold, the Guardians of the Galaxy. This is back in 1978 when the Avengers crossed over. I have this in my trade paperback. I've read it like four or five times now. And it has the original Guardians of the Galaxy, my favorite ones. You got Charlie 27, and you've got Yondu, and you got Nikki Gold, and you got Vance Astro, and Starhawk, and you got them all there, and it's amazing. And you have the Avengers on the other side. You got Beast front and center. The Avengers and the Guardians are kind of at each other's throats, but... and even Wonder Man, Hollywood, is back there running with his trench coat and his sunglasses on. But yeah, Korvac Saga is one of those things that you can like pick up in a trade. Started with Avengers 167, and it's just one of those important Avengers storylines. So.
Number 20, the Phoenix Force.
Speaking about Marvel important storylines, Uncanny X-Men issue number 101 back in 1976. The all-new, all-different X-Men, in the Mutant Heroes Hour of Maximum Peril, enter the Phoenix. This is the whole thing with Jean Grey and the Phoenix Force, and you got Cyclops and Nightcrawler and Storm all in the water, and the Phoenix Force is rising out of the water, and much of what we've seen, some of it in movies, and some of it we're probably going to re-see in the upcoming movies, for a second chance of properly telling that story. Yeah. It's cool that he mentioned that, so check that out, the Phoenix Force.
Let's see, number 21, Baron Zemo.
Baron Zemo first appeared in Avengers in issue number 4. Then, but when he met the Vision, that would have been in Avengers Annual number 3, which was in 1969. And with that one, we have, I don't even think I found a photo of that one, or I just failed to grab it. But Baron Zemo... Classic Captain America villain, Avengers villain. Check that out.
Number 22, the Kree Skrull War.
Kree, yeah, it's a lot of...
Skrull.
Yeah, it's a lot of words that are KR and SKR and all that. The Kree Skrull War, Avengers 89, back in 1971. The only good alien is a dead alien. And we see Captain Marvel at that time, co-starring Captain Marvel, the man without a world, is like set up in an electric chair And I think Rick Jones is there, and Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver and Vision are watching there. My buddy Sean from Michigan, who is a huge, huge Vision fan, he had recommended, he's like, you got to read the Kree-Skrull War for some awesome Visionness. So check that out, starting with Avengers 89 in 1971.
Of course, Vision fights Ultron again, but number 24 is Kang.
Yep, Kang, and since we talked about Kang and Immortus and all that stuff, he's another one of those. It's just like, there's so many Kang Avengers stories, just you're going to come across
it. Number 25, the Red Skull.
Same thing. Red Skull, you can't just pinpoint any specific thing. You're just going to have so many different ones. So Red Skull, read them.
Yeah, there's a lot of Ultron fights. So jumped to number 28, Claw.
Because we see Ultron again. 28, yeah. Claw, Ulysses Claw, Avengers number 83 in 1970. We know Ulysses Claw so far in the Avengers MCU because he was in Age of Ultron. He was in Wakanda. His arm got ripped off by Ultron. He was dealing with the Wonderflonium, but that's from Dr. Horrible. Dealing with Adamantium, but dealing with, why can't I think of the frickin' Captain America shield and all that stuff. The word slips in my mind right now as I'm saying all this other things. But anyways, Avengers number 83 in 1970, you got Giant Man knocked out, and then you have Valkyrie standing like on his head, and Black Widow's on the cover, Black Panther's laid out, Quicksilver's laid out, the Inhumans Queen Medusa is there, and Vision's knocked out, and Scarlet Witch and Wasp are looking, and Valkyrie goes, "All right, girls, that finishes off these male chauvinistic pigs." Guest starring Black Widow and the magnificent Medusa. Apparently somewhere in there is when Claw first battled the Avengers.
Number 29, Onslaught.
Avengers issue number 401 from 1996. Earth's Mightiest Heroes and Onslaught, Sins of the Father. This is Onslaught Phase 1, guest starring Magneto and Rogue of the X-Men. So yeah, that's a whole story there, that Phase 1 of that story.
Well, that's perfect. Number 30 is Magneto.
Yep, and that's just going to be one of those where it's just like, yep, Magneto, look him up.
Yeah.
and granted, too, after like, you know, an hour of researching all this stuff and getting all the covers, I'm just like, these characters are just very, you know, main villains. So it's like, yeah, you'll find them.
Well, and we got, of course, now you just said that, number 31, we have the Kang Dynasty.
Yep, and now we have Kang again, but once they threw Dynasty, it was a lot easier to find that, because that happened in Avengers 41 in 2001. So this would have been Volume 3 when Kurt Busiek had relaunched it there. But Issue 41 here has a slightly different looking Kang the Conqueror, as one would know. I think he got some Miss Marvel and Vision and Iron Man, and I think Wonder Man is on there, or a version of him of some sort. But yeah, the Kang Dynasty, that begins right there with Issue 41.
Number 32, Demetrius.
Demetrios, Avengers AI from 2013, and that launched right away. Sam Humphries had the series right from issue one, I think. I think that was a limited series, so I'm just plugging that series in itself.
Oh, AI. There we go. Of course, we got Ultron again.
Yep, Ultron again.
Number 34, the Black Talon. Talon.
Avengers 152 from 1976, as well as The Vision and Scarlet Witch issue 12, or from the 12 issue miniseries from 1985. So yeah, you can check out the Avengers thing, and then if you're a Vision fan, then pick up those. I own the originals of the 12 issue miniseries for Vision and Scarlet Witch.
Number 35, Galactus.
Galactus. Yep, he's a pretty pretty vague thing, too. So
he's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, so just read him.
We've got Ultron again, and then finally, we hit number 37. I have never heard of this character ever in the history of my life. Master Pandemonium.
Same here. But you can find all about him in West Coast Avengers in the 80s. I couldn't find any like other specific thing other than the fact that... let's see here. Maybe this was a screen capture here. Yeah, maybe that was something different. But anyways, yeah, that's as vague as I can get. It's just Vision is like a co-creator West Coast Avengers with Wonder Man, so just go check out. I'm assuming this is the Black Talon, because it's a black guy and he's got some bird and he's got some claws. And on this cover of the Avengers 152, he's saying, "Rise, Wonder Man, you shall become my unliving slave. Nothing can stop me now. Nightmare in New Orleans." So yeah, during all this that was happening, Matthew Lynn figured out that Vision accidentally said, not accidentally, but he noticed that he said that his son was with him, questioning where his wife and daughter was, because he didn't say...
Not us.
Yep.
Yep.
And that's the big thing there. He then lied to say that his family...
Yep.
He lied to say that his family was with him the night Chris was killed. And that's when it gets... I wasn't flipping along here at first, but it appears I just flipped it perfectly, I think, to catch it up. He goes back home. He says, "I am home." He mentions the table's broken when she Hulk smashed it earlier.
The table is broken. I do not know how to fix it. Like, the conversations are still really funny.
Yeah, and he goes, "It's too late. Let's go up to our bedroom. We'll fix everything in the morning." And he's like, "You know, take your time. I'll meet you upstairs." And we end on her going, "I do not know how to fix.
Yeah. Issue number 6, P versus NP.
We've got Vision and Virginia kissing on the cover with going down in a blaze of glory, if you will, as the house is on fire and their garage door still has the spray paint on, you can see in there, and it's a crazy...
It's a crazy scene.
Crazy cover to
it's
start
like
in
the world
here.
Is collapsing around them.
And what's interesting here, we revisit the neighbors, but this time we have George here, the one who was against, like, bringing the cookies
that's
over
the guy
in the beginning.
Who has a stick shoved up his ass.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's the best way of describing it.
Yeah, yeah. And what's interesting is that... he is approaching a door. We got the narration from Agatha going on. We see the mailbox hovered down from the sky, apparently. So maybe when it's mail time, then the that happens. I don't know. But what's interesting is we have a curious dog.
He's a cutie.
Yeah. A little black poodle type of...
Now you're going to tell me you hate dogs too, right?
Dogs are awesome.
Okay, all right. Just want to make sure.
Flowers are dogs.
Yeah, okay.
Just... Dogs, I love dogs. Must love dogs, right?
Yeah.
And then a movie, Must Love Dogs.
Probably.
If it's not, I'm making it now.
Sounds like something that would be on the Hallmark Channel.
Copyright, Latch and Fillion, we're making it. We have a narration of math equations while this dog finds, is sniffing around this house, and he sniffs around to the backyard, and,
he smells something.
And we see, some logos here, and we turn around, and he's, like, digging up, and we see the head of Grim Reaper.
The way this is drawn is ridiculous.
It's gory and gross and disgusting.
But it's somehow, it's funny. It shouldn't be, but it is.
And then the dog is starting to lick the cheek of the dead Grim Reaper, uncovers the weapon that eventually, you know, just halved Viv, daughter Viv. And the dog is playing around, checks out this weapon, and gets electrocuted. And as the visions are having a conversation, I had to say this one because this is funny. They're all sitting there at the table, and Vision goes, they jump into midway through a story, he goes, "And Iron Man asserted that Thanos' resemblance to a Skrull might be due to the Pym's fifth law of paranaxonobionomics, which asserts that free bodies near similar particle phenomenon," and then you see in the back, zap, and then he's like, "Did you also hear that? Something outside in the backyard?" And he's like, "I'm going to go check it out." He phases through the door.
I love how, even though they're synthesoids, his daughter is just spacing out on her cell phone.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so the dog's been electrocuted by the Grim Reaper weapon, and Vision is like, "What?" Yeah, and oh my god, now it's kind of gross. The dog's, like, half charred and, like...
He's alive. The dog's alive, but he's kind of... Yeah, he's been burnt.
It looks...
He's smoking.
When I see visuals of this, like, the way that it's, like, got this, like, gnarled type of face and it's kind of charred and stuff like that, I always picture the end of the first Child's Play movie where he comes out of the fireplace and he's just, like, limping down the hallway.
A long time since I've seen that.
God, I love those movies.
Man.
So, yeah, that's kind of what the dog is unfortunately looking like. But we cut back to George, because George is coming over looking for Zeke, the dog. So it's George's dog. What's interesting is that the house is torn apart. Virginia had answered the door. Huh. He goes in. The house... Off mic, I had talked about a theory about the vase and the Wundagore Everbloom. And this now maybe makes my theory that we see the Everbloom torn up. We see... George looks over at the vase that's just now floating in the air, just off from a table, and she's explaining that they're
remodeling.
Yeah, remodeling.
I read an article online. It said to get clean, you're required to introduce
substantive. Okay, yeah.
I want to get clean. But you look at this house and it looks like a fucking tornado went through it.
Yeah, so
it's not cleaning.
George is wondering what's going on, and then as they're walking out of there and possibly into the kitchen, then that's where, definitely into the kitchen, that's where Viv, the daughter, is like just crouched down and looks like she's very sad and breaking down over something. And they're going through, and she's just she's like, "I'm sorry, George, I do not see the dog." And they look out in the backyard, and he's questioning if they're going to put in a pool or something.
Yes, we're putting in a pool.
And then before he leaves, that's when she remembers that they have the cookie tray from the very first issue of the very same tray that she murdered the Grim Reaper with. And... the dialogue between Virginia and Vision about the murders is... that comes up next. The cookie tray is what she has for him. She apologizes.
It's bent.
Yeah, that it's bent. he found the Captain America's lighter that he gifted them from World War II. Back from the Second World War, it still works. And he's just kind of looking at that and... he's just kind of interesting. And now Vin's in the background, and he's oiling himself
up. I just saw that for the first time.
Back of the neck.
Love it.
Squeak, squeak. So it's kind of like a Tin Man sort of thing from The Wizard of Oz. Now we're about to get all Dexter-like. We get some dialogue between Virginia and Vision about the murders. While he's doing that, he's doing some Dexter-like shit. And I say that because of the apron, because I've only seen about four episodes of Dexter. But when I look at that, and I see a knife, and I see blood, and I'm like, you know what? There's some Dexter shit, like, happening in this basement
here. He's chopping something up.
Yeah. Oh, God. So, they're talking about the brainwaves from Ultron and from Wonder Man that made them, and they're just talking about these murders of Chris and the Grim Reaper, or not, Chris and the Grim Reaper, and now it gets very, it's for anyone with a weak stomach, this is a very hard panel to look at, but the dog Zeke is now his brain is being removed.
Yep.
So
that's normal, right?
Moving on. He was just talking about taking the brainwaves, that Ultron took the brainwaves of Wonder Man to make him, and now he's taking the actual brain out of Zeke for what? We don't know, but he hooks it up to a bunch of medical things, and he gets ready.
Wires and stuff, yep. Suction cups.
And he's ready to zap it, and now he's coming across the street, or floating down. Yeah, it looks like he was walking across the street at first. He's floating down from the sky, so wherever he was doing that shenanigans, he's now approaching his wife with a large box. And what's inside that box?
We've got...
What's in the box? What's in the box?
We've got a cute little green doggy.
He gives the dog to the kids. He revived Zeke's brain, turned it into...
a synthesoid dog.
Yeah, a family dog.
It certainly doesn't look... Like, you know, it doesn't look like a real dog.
No, the dog is green, and it's got the same kind of vision eyes, and Vin seems very happy, and just as any boy would of getting a dog, you know, but Viv is still sitting in the corner, and the dog looks up, comes up, and I guess that's the synthesoid way of sniffing, but just going, just a bunch of ends, and she asks, what is your name? And he just goes, woof. The dog goes woof. But what's interesting is that...
I imagine that dog speaking it. Because I think if it was an actual dog woofing it, he would have wrote it differently.
Yeah.
So I imagine like a woof. Maybe. Like a, you know, no dog really barks like that. If a dog would say woof, you'd be like, what the hell is going on?
And basically what's going on is the narration from Agatha that continues on throughout the series. They're going through here and... they're all looking at the family, and maybe this dog is going to bring everybody together. The house is in shambles for some unknown reason, you know, and just my guess is that, you know, something exploded with that vase and, you know, these Wundagore leaves from that Everbloom. I don't know. It's crazy that just all this shit is happening, but we're just going to... We have six more issues at this point at the story of this reading, at the time of this reading. And we're pretty much finding out that Vision is going to do anything and everything for his family. And what's interesting is that the narration is coming to a close as issue 6 is, as we cut to Agatha in ghost form. As I mentioned earlier, it's currently ghost form in the Scarlet Witch series. I guess we'll just read this last page here. I want to start with...
You want me to read Agatha?
Yep.
And so the Vision has abandoned the illusion of P in favor of the reality of NP.
So the issue is called P versus NP, and like I said, there's a bunch of mathematics going on with the dog was digging up the... It's a bunch of stuff that just goes over my head. I took algebra twice, so I'm just like, you know what? This is a comic book, and I'm still not going to understand all this P versus NP, but anyways.
And she continues speaking, he will now do anything, everything in his attempt to find happiness for his wife and children. And we go to the next panel. He will kill you. He will kill your families.
At this point, we had seen Scarlet Witch standing facing the way she's facing, and we do see the back of Captain America Sam Wilson's head. And when I read this digitally, I didn't know what was happening, because when you turn the page, your eye wanders and you see what's on that last page. That was the beauty of digital reading, is that
I go
panel-to-panel viewing, and I didn't know what was going on, and once I did that... Last flick of the finger for Vision, issue number 6, she finishes by saying...
He will raise the world. R-A-Z-E.
Yep, and she is addressing Marvel heroes such as Sam Alexander Nova, Rogue, Miles Morales, Spider-Man, Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel, Doctor Strange, we got Beast.
Thor.
I think that's Crystal from the Inhumans. We have Miss America, we got Medusa, we got She-Hulk. We got the character from the latest issue of Sam Wilson, who I've still not yet learned her name. We have a guy next to her who I've still not yet learned his name. Then we have Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel. We got Black Panther, Spider-Man, Storm. We got Sam Wilson. We got Thor and Iron Man. Pretty much all those heroes together.
Yep, and she's laying it down for them.
And that's how this trade paperback closes out. Issue 6, finding out that there's a good chance since her cat ate the Wundagore Everbloom leaves, and then she feasted on the insides of her cat, and then stabbed the cat, and the cat attacked her and bit her, then she stabbed the cat again, and the blood flowed out onto the Everbloom leaves, but like, and she had a weird like spiritual thing, and she woke up like the Undertaker. And so the fact that she's now telling them, she's narrating the story the entire time, and she knows that Vision's going to kill everybody.
Yep.
And it started with protecting his family.
Yeah. Whew. Yeah, I know. That was, that was fun.
Yeah, and
I wonder if we're going to read the next 6 issues.
I think so.
Yeah.
We have a couple comments here I just want to mention. Sue Lyon, who frequently is on our letters page for Comic's Sake on iTunes. That's how you listen to this to begin with. Sue Lyon writes, because she has possession of this paperback.
Yep.
She writes, very first ever comic read. Probably read Veronica, etc. years ago. Now I'm in the big leagues.
Love it. Oh, and that's a great comic.
I cannot wait to share that with Tom King, and I want to link him up to this podcast and being
awesome.
Like, hey, we're not experts here, and hopefully we didn't misread facts and stuff, and hopefully we did it justice and really detailed it. And I want to make sure that Tom King and Gabrielle, he's got like 3 names, so I wanted to make sure I got all 3 of those names in there. Gabrielle Hernandez Walta. And Jordy Belair. Wanted to send those links out once this episode is published, but that's a pretty high praise from her, who...
Someone who never read comics.
Yeah, and she goes first ever comic book, and she's in the big leagues. Sean from Michigan, my online friend who loves comics, Vision and the X-Men are some of his favorites. He pointed out his favorite Vision sequence, which is from Avengers Volume 2, number 65 through 70, in a title called The Red Zone. And what's interesting, and I have it, oh god, this is amazing.
Fall into the Red Zone? No.
Nope.
Okay.
By Jeff Johns and Olivier Coipel. I met Olivier Coipel at a Comic-Con a couple years back.
Of course.
but Jeff Johns, haven't had the pleasure to meet yet, and Sean, huge Marvel fan, huge X-Men fan, doesn't read DC, not really into it, and he playfully bashes it when needs to and stuff like that. Jeff Johns is a local guy in Michigan, from Michigan, and he was at like a local shop, and all the people were there for all of his DC stuff. Sean was in the line for this Marvel stuff, specifically for Avengers Volume 2, number 65 to 70, and I showed you the picture months ago, where there was a box of Frankenberry on the table of the comic book store. And when Sean was sharing, because I asked him, I'm like, can you give us some stuff to share for the podcast? And he mentioned, he's just like, yeah, he loves Frankenberry. He loves cereal. And like, apparently he called out to an assistant to get 2 bowls and some spoons and some milk. And like, he like had cereal with Jeff Johns or something, I think. But he brought up this Vision thing, and, you know, out of all these people meeting him from Marvel and stuff. So issue 65, I think, is where it's directly taken from. And I didn't read the story yet, but I'm definitely going to, especially since Sean recommended it. We see cars, I don't know what's happening in the context, but cars are crashing, there's RVs on the road, and people have panic, and there's a little boy who's like dragging his mom, who was just in this accident. It's just all this like awful stuff going on. We have a word balloon off-panel that goes, I promise you, son. And it's Captain America holding the boy in just a very heroic image, even with the light reflecting off his shield. He goes, we're going to get you home. And I'm not sure what's going on here. Once again, now there's helicopters in the sky. Vision's also in the sky. And Captain America goes, get aboard one of those choppers, Vision. Hands the boy to Vision. And Vision goes, of course, flies up to these military choppers. And Captain goes, and tell those soldiers to make sure he gets whatever treatments they have ASAP. The boy gets home, and he's walking back and running back into the fray. And he goes, I gave him our word. Well, now we cut to inside of the military ship, and the soldiers are going, who do you think did it? One guy goes, Al-Qaeda, Hydra, Hezbollah, take your pick, man. And we see these people that are all the transports and these citizens that are all knocked out and laying down and just all dirtied up and all this stuff. And then one of the soldiers is like, what? And Vision comes flying in, nesting this, like, you know, 5 to 7 year old boy or so. And Vision goes, this child needs help. And the soldiers go, we can't take any more on. We're loaded to capacity. And the other one goes, any more weight and we'll drop. And Vision knocks the gun out of the soldier's hand, throws the gun out of the window, grabs the other guy's gun, throws out of the window, and the guys are like, hey, our guns. And this is probably, oh God, I'm getting chills. And I haven't even read the story other than this. This is probably why Sean mentioned it, that this is one of his favorite Vision moments. Vision goes, your weapons weigh approximately 60 pounds, as does this boy. He goes, machines can be replaced. He cannot. And Vision goes, I suggest you reevaluate your priorities, gentlemen. And he starts to, like, just do all this weird, you see the inside of his circuitry and stuff. He goes, contact your loved ones, pray to your higher powers. And he starts to just kind of do Vision things as he starts to leave. And he goes, you may not make it out alive. And that is what Sean called out and said, this is my favorite Vision moment. Huh. Written by Jeff Johns. Art by Olivier Coipel. And gosh, I want to read that and buy it properly. So
do it.
All of that stuff is there.
Yeah,
so
there we go.
That is Vision.
First spotlight.
Any final thoughts as we wrap this up?
You know, we've been talking about this comic now for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And that doesn't stop me from wanting to read the next issue, like right now, this very second.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just like, I think I could talk about this comic every day. So
if you are new or old to the comic book collecting community, you can buy issues 7 and 8, which I think is current. 9 is probably coming out in July/August. You can buy them digitally right now if you want, or go to your local comic shop and pick up those issues before they're all sold out. Or come like January, February-ish, like a couple months after this initial 12-issue run from Gabriel and Tom wraps up, then they'll probably do the Volume 2 to collect their whole run. And then we were talking about, like, we want that in the hardcover,
too, absolutely.
Eventually.
That's an insta-buy.
Yeah. So
I hope I get to meet him someday.
Sue is talking. I'm going to lend her my individual issues, and she's excited to buy the trade paperback.
Awesome.
Come next year, probably, is when that's going to come out. And, yeah, it was just amazing. Our first spotlight, as you said, for Comic's Sake presents Baby Got Back issues number 1. So once you go to number 1 for the month of July, we're going to eventually have to do Baby Got Back issues number 2 for the month of August.
Yes, sir.
And I had picked The Vision, which you quickly agreed. And you're like,
didn't
we
even have to think about it.
Yeah. I didn't have to sell you on the fact that we were going to talk about that. So now we're going to switch off months. It is your choice. This is the first time we're announcing it.
Yep.
What is going to be Baby Got Back issues number 2 for the month of August 2016?
We are going to be talking about The Killing Joke by Alan Moore.
Awesome.
The reason we're going to be reading this is, of course, with conjunction of the animated movie that's going to be coming out.
Yes.
And this is one of those must, quote-unquote, must-read Batman stories that even people that know nothing about comics, they might be able to pick it up at Walmart or Target.
Yep.
You can kind of find it everywhere. And
there's some game-changing moments for some characters of things that continue throughout history of effects that happen in this book. I had recently read it. You had lent me your copy, and I'm excited. I'm going to buy the. They have a, like a recent like deluxe like version. I'm sure it's got some.
Two
like,
of them right away.
We'll do.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's got some like concept art or something. But that way, when we read it, that I'll have my copy, and then we'll be seeing it because it's going to be one night only.
Yep.
And that's July 25th, I think. Yeah, it's in July.
It's not at the beginning of August?
No.
All right, we'll have to look at that.
Yeah. But whatever it is, if you're listening to this on time, there's maybe time to still get tickets for like another 2 weeks yet. I'm pretty sure it's at the end of July. But Killing Joke, animated movie, one time only. It'll be out on video come Christmas. But yeah, so August, we're going to read that. It's a much shorter book.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do some research and get some sweet facts.
We're going to be just as excited to talk about that as we were to talk about The Vision.
Yeah. So yeah, that is it. And I guess that is it. So we just keep reminding everyone to read comics for the
sake of reading the comics. That's what it is.
For comics.
For Comics Sake on iTunes.
At For Comics Sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/ForComicsSake.
For Comics Sake on Instagram.
Or email us ForComicsSake@yahoo.com.
Music by Bicycle vs. Motor Vehicle. Please visit them online, soundcloud.com/BVSMV, as well as BVSMV.bandcamp.com.